The Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Lift your eyes up, let your wise rise up. See the signs of the times. If it's time, rise up, rise up. When death and hell dwell among all God's people, when those we chose and trusted have become completely corrupted and inherently evil, when the feast that feeds you starves our father's children, when snuff, porn, and pedo forms begin to get top billing, rise up. When famine claims millions, when justice gives blind eyes to billions, when the Lord's anger is no longer feared, if his protection is gone and your enemies are near, if you've seen the seas spill over and the mountains shake, break, and fall, if the moon ever turns blood red and you can't see the sun at all, rise up, no matter if the
peace and welcome to New Abolitionist Radio on the Black Talk Radio Network, a program that seeks to educate, inform, and agitate on the issue of 21st century legalized slavery, hosted by social activist and spoken word poet Max Farkas and Black Talk Media Project founder Scotty Reed. On this program, we discuss recent news on legalized 21st century slavery and human trafficking as it is practiced through the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, along with projects and people who help combat it. Today is the May 9th, 2018 broadcast in the last month of our sixth season. On and near this day in history, on May 9th, 1800, John Brown, the abolitionist, was born. Happy birthday, John Brown. On May 7th, 1914, U.S. Congress established what is called Mother's Day. Also on May 9th, 1982, my oldest son and namesake was born on Mother's Day. Happy birthday, son. Today is a free flow today. We'll be building in a Socratic dialogue during the program, and I want to talk about the nation of Brazil and their newly formed for-profit prison industry. I believe that by seeing how this system we import globally works in a nation that hasn't had generations of propaganda to legitimize illegal slavery, it can offer us some critical insights. Of course, we've got a few stories for our segment, The Slave Catcher Chronicles. Too damn many, to be honest. It's always too damn many. I also want to rant a little bit, if you don't mind, just a little about what being an abolitionist ally means and why it's so critical to call slavery by its rightful name. Then, if time allows, we want to cover an article, an upcoming book about the last slave ship survivor who gave an interview in the 1930s. It just surfaced. In Direct Action News, we want to remind you about a call for a Juneteenth mobilization against prison slavery from SPARC this year. Supporters of Operation Push are calling on all opponents of mass incarceration and modern-day slavery internationally to honor the Juneteenth holiday, Tuesday, June 19, 2018, with community organizing and direct action. Another reminder, a nationwide prison slave labor work strike is being called for on August 21st through September 9th. I have been informed that Angola prison has already begun. If you know someone inside, tell them what's going on. In honor of his birthday, our abolitionist in profile tonight is John Brown, 1800 to 1859. Our riders of the 21st Century Underground Railroad are Gregory Counts and Van Dyke Perry. With the consent of the District Attorney's Office, a New York County Supreme Court judge vacated their convictions for a 1991 gang rape that the complainant now acknowledges never occurred. The two men served a combined 36 years for a crime that never happened. Be sure to follow the information that we provide on our Facebook page at New Abolitionist Radio and also support our efforts by joining the community.blacktalkradionetwork.com and finding the links on our abolitionist planning page. So let's get started. Got a question or a comment? You can call in at 704-802-5056. You can chat with us and others by logging in at uberconference.com/blacktalkradionetwork. Once again, I'm Max Parthas. What's happening, Brother Scotty?
Hey, greetings to you, Max. I'm like you. I'm a little disturbed at some of the conversations around slavery that we are witnessing right now that was spurred by this narcissist who, by the way, doesn't read books. I mean, this person admitted to not reading, and people are following his lead and saying slavery was a choice. And I was watching this doctor, I can't remember his name right now. I posted the video to Black Talk Radio Network. I follow his YouTube channel. And, you know, he mentioned the fact that this person is a narcissist, doesn't read. And the timing of his comments really stink, because you just had a United Nations committee say that the U.S. owes reparations, not just for slavery. And again, we still gotta get the message across to the UN that slavery ain't never been abolished in the United States. But they were talking about pre-1865 slavery and then the period commonly known as Jim Crow, you know, mentioning racial terrorism. And so, you know, and then we just had the Jewish people, just as they do every year, you know, with their Never Forget campaign about the Holocaust that occurred in Germany, you know, even though it impacted more than just Jewish people, but they're telling you to never forget. And in the wake of that, we got this man talking about slavery was a choice. Just been I don't want to say angry. Angry isn't the proper emotion. Just a little annoyed, I guess, at the willful ignorance, it seems. So,
and I know, disappointing anger.
What's that?
Disappointing anger. For me, it felt like disappointing anger to see that so many people are so ill-informed and really don't give a damn.
No, they don't. So, I mean, but again, we just got to work with those who see the problem and want to do something about it and not pontificate on slavery, you know, back in the day, victims of slavery back in the day, and why they didn't do this and why they ain't do that. So my question is, why you ain't doing nothing about slavery today?
Ain't that the truth, Scotty? You know, I actually wrote a poem about that whole concept and released it today. And also later on today, I got a new track that's featuring yours truly that has been produced by my brother Jay Chattel, who also features on it with a couple of other artists out of Rhode Island. It's called Exposing the American Pie, and it's pretty damn awesome. I'm looking forward to sharing that with our listeners here exclusively tonight on New Abolitionist Radio. The video is supposed to come out around June, and I'll be heading out to Rhode Island in another week and a half to do the recording and to also celebrate the graduation of another abolitionist, Sister Jessica Nine Names. You know, she calls in periodically. She's graduating and getting her degree in another week and a half. So, yeah, Scotty, what else has been going on with you this week? Anything else you want to talk about in this before we get into the stories?
Nothing specific I want to talk about. You know, just trying to stay on my grind and keep the network rolling and putting out information and what have you. But, you know, always look forward to Wednesday nights with you and the listeners.
Same here, Scotty. I wanted to do a little bit of a rant. Think now would be a good time for it? Maybe two, 3 minutes.
Sure.
What I wanted to talk to, well, I'm going to call it a rant because it's something that upsets me. It's a miscommunication people don't seem to understand. There's three really primary groups vying to control the narrative of what it is that we're facing, not only in communities of color, but all communities in poverty across this nation, what we face on a regular basis. And those three different schools are first reformists. And, you know, we've been having reformists now for generations. And reform is basically saying that there's no real wrong criminality happening here. It's just a series of mistakes that, you know, we made over time because we didn't understand. And now, if we tweak this and move that and push this, we can make everything better in 50 years. That's what reform is. Sometimes it's radical reform where people need to try to make changes immediately, like with the deals with the overcharging of phone calls in prisons. That's, you know, people are trying to push that right now because it's really doing damage to poor people who can't afford these things. And it's leaving those who are behind bars without any contact. So that's reform. And then you have the other group, which is the prison abolitionists. They've been around a long time. I remember when I first became an abolitionist, a slavery abolitionist, it was because I listened to Angela Davis, and she broke down to me the whole 13th Amendment and how that was the continuation of slavery. And for me, that was my click moment. That was when I understood it. I had read the 13th Amendment, but like most people, you know, I skipped over that except as if it didn't exist. I had been pre-programmed. But when she pointed it out to me, that was my click moment. But also, in the wake of that statement that she made, a prison abolitionist group has been born. And they've been doing great work out here, making changes within the prison community, doing protests to prevent exploitation and things like that. I'm not putting anyone down. There are people working. But in any case, they see this, from what best I understand, talking with many of them, as the problem is prisons. Prisons are just a den of human rights violations. And if we can just end prisons as we know them today, everything else will turn out okay. And we could work on them over time. And then there's the third group, which has always been around, and they are the slavery abolitionists. Those are the people who see this issue in a different manner. They see it as a crime against humanity. They expect that people should be held accountable for committing crimes against humanity. They want all the people who have been imprisoned and violated and exploited over these many generations to be freed from bondage. That's equal to as much as 1.5 million people. And studies have shown that at least 40% of our prison population has no reason to actually be in prison. That's the minimum, 40% of 2.5 million or 2.4 million. So we're talking about over 1 million people max. Being released. Yes, Scotty?
I've heard as high as 60%. You know,
as high.
Yeah,
right.
That's
60%. Unacceptable. And it's a crime.
Nonviolent victimless crimes. We're talking about drug use. We're talking about where someone is by their own volition and not coercion engaging
debtors' prisons.
No, engaging in sex trafficking, mm-hmm. trafficking themselves. You know, right. People do all kind of things to survive poverty, man, and they do things that they otherwise would not do. I don't think anybody wants to be walking the street putting their lives at risk. And I just don't think that they should be put into slavery for a victimless crime. If we're going to be about freedom and liberty, let's be about freedom and liberty. If what I'm doing, you don't have to approve of it, but if it is not intruding upon your freedom and liberty, and I'm not bringing harm to anyone, violating them by violating their property or their happiness, then why should I be put in prison? Because you don't approve of what, you know, I might be engaged in.
Right. So for us, Scotty, as slavery abolitionists, we see this as a crime that needs to have people held responsible or they will continue doing it. We need to see a system that needs to end, not to be gradually transformed or gradually fixed, because in our opinion, you can't fix a crime against humanity. That's not how things work. You don't fix it. If there was a genocide going on, you don't go, I'm going to fix the genocide with some radical reform and things like that. That's not how it works. It's a crime. It needs to end. And it doesn't need to end in 50 years or gradually over time. It needs to end yesterday. Every day that we spend trying to convince you that this is freaking slavery and a crime against humanity, people are dying. Three men just got raped while we talked about it. Two people died today from police killings while we're talking about it. And Scotty mentioned the nonviolent prisoners who should be released.
Nonviolent and, victimless. Also, prisoners who are... Well, there's a distinction. I appreciate the political prisoner community pointing this out to me years ago. We have people who are political prisoners like Mumia Abu-Jamal and Herman Bell and others. I think Herman Bell may be out now. But then we have prisoners of politics. Those are the primary victims of the Nixon's drug war, which, you know, we have talked about in depth throughout the year. So that's what I mean. Prisoners of politics.
Yes, Scotty. So when we talk about those people as the ones that we would like to see free, even those who commit the most violent of crimes also became that way for a reason. New studies, and they have been showing this over years, but now they're pretty confident that evidence shows that lead exposure increases crime. And where do you find this lead exposure at? In poverty, in places of poverty, in Flint, Michigan, in Chicago, Illinois, and anywhere you find large groups of black people, you're going to find lead exposure on a generational level. Not only does it dumb you down, it also makes you liable to attack people violently for no apparent reason whatsoever. So it's very possible that many of the violent criminals that we have in prison today are not there because of something that they chose to do, but because of something that was done to them. So in our instance, in our belief, we think this needs to end. The other two that I mentioned, which was reform and prison abolition, do not see this as a crime against humanity. They do not see it as something where people need to be held accountable. They do not see this as something that can be abolished through our constitution or through international laws, while we, on the other hand, do. And that's a very big difference, which leads me to the final part of what I wanted to talk about. People call themselves allies, but we're here talking about this is slavery. And if you're countering that argument, you're not my ally. You're basically telling people I'm lying. I don't know what I'm talking about. I just told you and showed you that the 47 words of the 13th Amendment has an exception. Then I pointed over here to these prisoners and said, look, the largest prison population in the history of humanity on planet Earth, and one in every eight black people in a prison on the entire planet are in prisons in the United States. And we've even showed you how it's going overseas, which we'll do further of tonight. So if you're countering that in any way, shape, or form, if you're dismissing it as some rantings of a madman, or if you even refuse to just investigate your own foundational beliefs, you're not my ally. I want to make that clear. You're not helping me. You're hindering me. You're fighting against me. And that means that you don't want slavery to end. You want to fix this shit.
You know,
this is my rant, Scotty.
And it was a good one, too. I wouldn't necessarily categorize that as a rant, man. I call it an impassioned plea. But, you know, I'll just add to that, Max, as you know, I discussed with you in private that apparently I have made some enemies in the prison abolitionist movement because I'm saying the public ain't ready to talk about abolishing prisons. And if somebody did kill one of my loved ones and they weren't removed from the community, you better believe that, you know, there's going to be some vigilante justice. That's just human nature and what have you. And I feel like pushing prison abolition at this point is distracting. It's distracting us from slavery abolition. Okay, let's push that first domino over first. And I'm just not sold on the idea of abolishing prisons. I do believe that prisons should be a humane place where offenders go to get actual rehabilitation, to have their needs addressed. If they have, you know, Like you mentioned, the lead poisoning, which does show to make individuals violent. Let's identify that. Let's get these people the help that they need while they in prison. Let's get them the medical attention that they need. Okay, if they committed a crime because of their circumstances or what have you, you know, let's see how we can help them so that when they get out, that they are not likely to wind back up in that situation, which slavery, prison slavery, actually just makes it liable that they'll be right back in there. You know, so I don't understand why people think that this is a viable argument to be made to the American public, because the American public ain't there yet. We still trying to get them to wrap their minds around the fact that slavery has not been abolished. The Constitution says so. So how do you think we're going to get people to wrap their minds around abolishing prisons? Yes, we should abolish prisons and erect rehabilitation centers where people can get the help that they need, get education, and if they are being forced to work, then they should also be paid the federal minimum wage so that they'll have a little savings when they get out, or they can still contribute to their family. They may have children, they may have elderly parents that need help, so they'll have that money there. So I'm with you, Max.
And you know, I just shared a video from a contact of ours in South Carolina prisons where they're showing right there on the video that they're drinking poison every day. The prison is feeding them brown water, and you don't know what's in that water. If you really want to do a study, you should study how many people in jails and prisons have been subject to lead poisoning. I bet you would be shocked at the findings of that. Because right now, they're feeding these people poison in South Carolina prisons. And we reported on here when Flint first was discovered that lead poisoning was all in their waterworks. The prisoners were being ignored completely. They were forced to continue drinking that until enough uproars finally forced the prison system in Flint, or the jailhouse in Flint, to go ahead and start giving them bottled water. But they stopped that long before they stopped it with the Flint, Michigan residents, purposely poisoning people behind bars, because we figure once you're behind bars, you're a forgotten person for whatever the reason. So, yeah, Scotty, that was it. And today, one of the things that I wanted to do, like I said, was maybe bring some insight by watching what's happening in other nations using the model that we created right here, specifically around 1994 with the Clinton administration, how we turned it into one great big for-profit industry that includes everything in our justice system, even the freaking judges and the prosecutors. All are doing these things because it generates freaking wealth. Our justice system follows market values. That statement alone is enough for a revolution.
Yeah, I mean, not much has changed. You know, we've always pointed out that Wall Street used to be known as an open-air slave market. And today, Wall Street is still engaged in offering stocks to, you know, private prison companies that are enslaving people.
Exactly, Scotty. I had a conversation with another Alabama candidate recently and pointed that out. She herself was an educator, a teacher, and a professor. And I wanted to know what her opinion was on the idea that the teachers union has collectively $100 million invested in the construction of private for-profit prisons. A clear conflict of interest under any circumstances. I don't give a damn if you don't know where your money's going. It's still a conflict of interest. You're making money in your retirement partially based on how many of your students are going to prison.
Mm-hmm. You know, Max, yesterday was Teacher Appreciation Day. I know you know that because you tweeted something out. But I also tweeted something out that not a single one of my teachers ever read the 13th Amendment to me or gave me a piece of paper or pointed it out in a school textbooks that, hey, the 13th Amendment has an exception clause where it transform it from chattel slavery to prison slavery. So, you know, I would appreciate if teachers, when they are on that particular subject, especially, you know, social studies, history classes, if they would point out to their students that we have this 13th Amendment and it has an exception clause, and have a school debate on it. I mean, have a classroom debate on it. Does it actually abolish slavery? You know, what do you think? So I would appreciate not only that all teachers get their unions to divest themselves from investing in private prisons, but I would also appreciate teachers teaching the truth about slavery in this country.
That's actually a perfect segue to the clip I want to play, which I linked in our chat room there, Scotty Reed. But before we play it, I just want to say that there are teachers out there who do that, like my sister Connie Greer, another abolitionist. Who and Hannah Drake, another abolitionist,
right,
who literally ask their students to read the 13th Amendment and discuss it critically. And that's really what we need.
Right. They're the exceptions out there.
Yes, always. There's always exceptions. So whenever somebody says nobody is doing something, you need to retract that, because there's always somebody doing something. But let's play this clip about what's happening in our schools in regards to the education of chattel slavery in the United States. It comes from The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
I know we've all been disappointed by Kanye West, but it turns out he's not the only one who doesn't seem to understand slavery in America. A recent online survey found that only 8% of American high school seniors could identify slavery as the central cause of the Civil War. Yeah, and even worse, 10% say the winners of the Civil War was Captain America. That's scary. And this seems like an insane statistic. But when you see how some schools try and teach slavery, you'll understand why.
A homework assignment given out this week at a charter school in San Antonio has set off an uproar. The students were instructed to make a list of the negative and positive aspects of slavery.
This is the paper Robert LeVar's eighth grade son was given to fill out in history class. You can see his son wrote not applicable on the side labeled positive aspects and wrote a long list of negative aspects. Robert says there's no excuse for this assignment.
Okay, first of all, that kid gets an A for life. That was amazing. Because that assignment is horrible. Like, that assignment is so bad, it almost seems like a trap to find the racist kids in class. It's like, okay, kids, what were the positive aspects of slavery? I know, cheap labor. Trick question, go to detention, you little grand wizard. And it gets worse. Because these insane lessons on slavery have spread into other subjects somehow.
Gwinnett County parents are outraged tonight over third grade math homework. It referenced slaves picking fruit and violence.
One problem said each tree had 56 oranges. If 8 slaves picked them equally, then how much would each slave pick? Then there was another. If Frederick got 2 beatings per day, how many beatings did he get in 1 week?
Okay. First of all, 2 beatings times 7, that's 14 beatings. But secondly, slavery is too serious to just casually drop into math problems. And by the way, I'm not just worried about how inappropriate those questions are. I'm worried about how it's escalating. Like, first it's just picking oranges, next it's beatings. You know, if the next question starts out with 8 men in white robes show up to Frederick's house, run! So look, obviously these assignments aren't treating slavery with the weight it deserves. But it turns out some teachers go too far in the opposite direction.
A Bronx teacher landing in hot water for what she allegedly did to children during an assignment on the slave trade.
She singled out black students, told them to lie on the floor, and stepped on their backs to show them, quote, how it is to be a slave.
A controversial lesson about slavery has been pulled from a Cerritos high school.
A mother complained recently after getting this email. Staff would act as slave ship captains, the email described, and the children slaves. They use masking tape to tie their wrists together, make them lay on the ground, and in a dark room, have them watch a clip from the film Roots.
What the f***, people? Imagine how confusing that is for a child. Because on the one hand, getting tied up is terrifying. On the other hand, getting to watch a movie in school is sweet as hell. Like, if you asked 8-year-old Trevor to get an ass-whipping to watch Jurassic Park in science class, I'm taking that beating. It's not right. And you have to admit, that lesson was historically accurate, I guess. You know, slave captors did tie up Africans, load them on boats, and then had a movie night. The Africans were like, move your chains, I can't see the screen, this is my favorite part, huh? Nobody puts baby in a corner, ha 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 ha. And look, I know some people say, Trevor, no, these teachers are just trying to be creative in how they teach. And I get that. But here's my question. How come teachers only seem to get creative like this with slavery? Right? It doesn't happen with any other historical subject. Like they're never like, hey, Connor, because you're Irish, I'm going to take away your lunch so you can learn about the potato famine. They never say that. And then also this thing of, like, justifying bad things in history. You know, you never hear of teachers asking kids to write an essay on why the iceberg was good for the Titanic, or asking for three reasons why those people deserve to be eaten by Jeffrey Dahmer. Like, all I'm saying is, if you're going to teach slavery that way, teach it all the way. Or at the very least, if you're going to teach slavery this way, end the lesson on a high note. You know, if you tie the kids up and make them watch Roots, then afterwards, they get to watch Django Unchained and whip the teacher's ass.
You heard it right there. I think it's a good time to open up the phone lines if anybody wants to call in and make any comments about what you just heard. Of course, Scotty and I both have our own comments we'd like to make.
Yeah, that telephone number is 704-802-5056, 704-802-5056. Hit the star key twice, and that will alert us that you have a question or comment. We have someone from 903. Did you have a question or comment? Thank you for calling in the New Abolitionist Radio. What would you like to share? 903? Okay, maybe you unmuted yourself by mistake. I'm going to place you back on mute.
Here.
Oh, okay.
There he is.
I just have to figure out how to work fine. It's too technical, man. This is what I'm talking about.
We're having some problems hearing you, brother.
All right, let me see if I can.
You sounded a little bit better when you said that.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir. Welcome to the program. I know who you are, but I'm going to leave that for you to tell if you choose to. What's happening, fam? Welcome here.
Man, ain't nothing to it, fam. This is all Swift Justice, though, man. I just been listening to y'all, man, and I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
But
any comments you want to make about what you've heard so far?
Man, yeah, of course there is, man. I want to talk about where you're talking, you know, you used the word, Max, a while ago, rehabilitate. And too many people out there in the world use that word rehabilitate loosely without even actually understanding the meaning of rehabilitate. And when you go and ask somebody, you know, what is it to rehabilitate someone who is in prison, a confined citizen in prison? And they're like, well, get them some drug treatment or get them some anger management. And I'm like really lost with all this. That has a small inkling to do with the word rehabilitate. What you just named off is treatment. But rehabilitate in itself actually means to restore. And when I ask myself, what am I being restored back to? I have to ask myself, what was I before I became a confined citizen? Well, Max, the last I checked, I was a taxpaying citizen, a so-called free citizen. And when I'm brought back out of the prisons, these plantations, I'm no longer a citizen. I can't vote. I can't carry a firearm. I can't go to college to become a doctor or a lawyer. I can't do a lot of things anymore. So how am I being rehabilitated if I can't get these rights back?
Scotty?
He's right. And that's why I was saying things like, okay, we need to pay people if they're going to be forced to work. If they need an education, then give them that education. Whatever it is that needs to be done in whatever area they need help in. But again, I have to preface my comments by saying the majority of people, according to what I've read, is don't belong in prison in the first place.
So, I agree with you there, Scotty. You take, for instance, I got guys around me daily who are violent, who are capable of killing at a drop of a dime. But what happens to that individual once he turns around and decides he wants to change his life and get his life back on track? I mean, is he not going to be rehabilitated? Because the true statistics about the matter is, at least here in Alabama, 95% of the individuals that are incarcerated will go back out to society one day. So what about those guys? I mean, those guys that might have been murderers, rapists, whatever it might be, they didn't receive a life without sentence. So one day they will be thrown back out to society, set up for destruction, for real, because of the way the structure is inside the prison, and especially the way it's growing and evolving daily and yearly, because we've been seeing it, I mean, from 1971 with Attica, and in 73 with Oklahoma and New Mexico in 80, and Coleman in 16, and Delaware in 17, and now South Carolina. It's getting more and more violent. And if we can't become more civil inside the prison system at our own choice, then we're tired of this stuff. That's leading us nowhere but back inside the plantation. Because as soon as we get the streets, we're going to, number one, we're going to be looking for the first thing to rob, steal, destroy, because we're not qualified for a job. We're not qualified as a citizen, because we can't go vote, but yet they're going to throw us back out there to work in taxation without representation. So well, what about those violent guys, man? I mean, those guys, too, may not be something that I would want to live through, or my kids are on the street, until they did decide to change.
You're absolutely right, Swick.
But do we throw that chance out, or do we do as a and mind you, Max, you know I am 100% about being non-biased. I have to look at this with two different views, from the convict view and from the citizen taxpayer view. I have kids myself, so I have to look at that, and I have to weigh these things. But I, even as a taxpayer citizen, and as a person that is, you know, if I was never been in the prison system, man, I see huge injustices because of the way the system is now designing and pretty much forcing individuals to be.
I agree with you. I mean, the environment, there's this old saying about how prisons can be colleges for criminality, where you have people who go in for non-violent, victimless crimes and thrown in with violent people who have not made that choice, as you stated, to turn their lives around and do something differently, and then they prey upon those other individuals. And then, you know, if I was one of those individuals and I'm subjected to that kind of environment, and nobody cares on the outside, don't care about what I'm being forced to go through, then when I get out, I'm going to be very jaded, and I'm pretty much not going to care about that community that I'm being released to, because nobody showed that compassion for what I went through. I mean, it's the way the system is designed is to keep that revolving door, you know, because without those bodies, then there's no profit.
You're exactly
absolutely
right on.
You have a great and valid argument there. And when we talk about rehabilitation, we're not just talking about teaching job skills or how to make better choices. How do you rehabilitate someone with lead poisoning? How do you do that? Who is prone to violence, not because of what the choices they've made, but because they've been poisoned. So, you know, it's a lot you have to take into perspective with that whole thing. I do know one thing. We have to destroy the system as we know it, because as we know it right now is nothing more than an assembly line of bodies for profit, and that's all it is. And I want to quote Pierre Joseph Proudhon, who said, "I build no system. I ask an end to privilege, the abolition of slavery, equality of rights, and the reign of law, justice, nothing else. That is the alpha and the omega of my argument. To others, I leave the business of governing the world." And to add to that, I would say that I wrote an article called "The Day Slavery Ended." I didn't write an article called "The Day After Slavery Ended," because I'm just got to have faith that enough people are well-versed and understanding enough to be able to manage that once we end slavery.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. You know, just to touch on something, you know, about, you said we have to change the way people think about the prison system. You know, one of the biggest problems that we have as far as an obstacle as prison abolition is this, and this is a viable point, and if people, the people who are listening, I really want you to pay attention to what I say, I'm saying about this. Very few people on the outside know the true identity of what's going on inside these prisons. For years, and I mean for years, people have cried out through letters, cried out through lawsuits about the conditions and the treatment inside the prison. And nobody said anything. They said that inmates are just looking for sympathy, that they want people to feel sorry for them. But now, all of a sudden, over the years, as cell phones that the government and the agency, DOC agents are crying about, are exposing what's really and truly identifiably wrong inside of the prison system, people are still not wanting to believe what they're seeing. And in order for us to actually be able to move, you, the people on the outside, have to start having some faith with the guys who have common sense and who can speak intelligently. And there are many guys inside these prisons who can do this. And I know people have said it over and over again, Swift, man, you're intelligent, you're intelligent. Man, I graduated ninth grade. I'm not intelligent. I just have common sense. And I'm speaking, and when I do speak, I do know how to speak. And so do these other brothers, man, like D in South Carolina, and my brother Kinetic Justice and Melvin Ray. You know, these brothers are putting it out there. Do not sell short what they're saying. Because what you're seeing on these cell phone clips that they're putting out there, they're doing it to get your attention so that you can identify the injustices of what's going on and what these guys are going through daily. You know, my heart pours out to them brothers over there, Max in South Carolina. For days on, they had to sit there in a bloodbath. I've been there. I know what that feels like. Wondering if I'm going to be the next, or if I'm going to have to take this man's life. And officers are watching. Here in Alabama, we sit here and, you know, daily, we have what they call a flocka epidemic, where officers sit back and just watch these guys flock out, as they call it.
But you can buy a mail order from China, right?
Right. And these guys have literally died because of this ordeal. And they say, well, we can't do nothing about it. Mm-hmm. Well, you may not personally can do anything about it, but what are you doing to make them want to change? Because these guys are inside the prison system, sitting back with nothing to do, twiddling their thumbs, and they're looking at one day, maybe I'll get out.
Right.
One day.
Well, we're hoping that we're giving them some hope with this fight against legalized slavery. Because, you know, we're very sympathetic about what's happening to all of us. But I would like to go back to the original topic, if you don't mind, Swift, about the teachers.
Hey Max, just to let you know, we got a couple of callers who also want to chime in.
All right. I want to hear some thoughts on what we just heard with that video about teachers. And hang on if you can there, Swift. We really appreciate you calling in. And I want to make some more comments about what we were talking about later on. But Scotty, you got another caller?
Yes, Jenna Capra has called in the New Abolitionist Radio. Thank you for joining us. What's on your mind?
Greetings. Can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Welcome to New Abolitionist Radio.
Greetings, Max. Greetings, Scotty. Brother Swift. Hope all is well with him. Everything that y'all are talking about is very serious. Very, very serious, and I hope that the listeners are paying attention to this. As far as the clip that you played, I found that it wasn't funny in a ha-ha sense, but this is the only place that we could really find any of this information being put out. I thought that was funny, and I can't believe this still going on type of sense. You understand what I'm saying? Because a comic has to say the truth in this society that we live in, and it's crazy that's how we base the news off of. If it wasn't for y'all two brothers and other brothers like you, and there's not many, putting this stuff out there, we would never know about this. I've been to jail, not to be confused with prison, for some of the listeners, quite a few times. And there are a couple of jails that are like that, specifically down in Mississippi. I'm not sure if the brother knows about what's going on down there.
We've talked about Walnut Grove in Mississippi, which they just shut down because the judge said it was just filled with freaking crimes against humanity.
Same way in Lower Mississippi. They need to shut that down, too. I guess I'm going to have to get with y'all and try to figure out the steps to take. But that's one of the ones that I visited. And it's people that's in there that's been there for 50 years, you know, and that was some years back. So, you know, these things happen, and I appreciate y'all most definitely. I just want to add that out there. And, like, what is it that the brother believes that us ordinary folks walking around on the ground can do to help, I ain't going to say correct the situation, but at least bring some attention to it outside of social media?
If I may answer, the most important thing that you can do, and this is my own perspective and opinion based on my own experience, because I've seen people go through these stages. The most important thing you can do is change your mind about what you're dealing with. If you think in your head that this is slavery, you're going to react in every way, shape, and form throughout your entire life in that manner. If you think that it's some kind of system that's broken that we can fix, then the same can be said there. By changing your mind about what you're dealing with, you'll find out what you can do, because it'll be on your mind. When you're talking about that level of crime against humanity, where you're not only in the United States, but as I said earlier, 1 in 8 black men across the entire planet are in U.S. prisons, that is an extreme circumstance. And you have to think differently about it. You have to react differently about it. You get to the point, as some, like Scotty and I, where somebody says the word mass incarceration and you want to dial 1-800 phone slap a person. You know what I'm saying? Because, like,
right.
What are you talking about?
I was just when about slavery to say ended. That, Max. I was just about to say that. You had posted a quote on Facebook from Frederick Douglass, who predicted that slavery was going to reemerge under a different name. And I had never seen that quote before. And if you can find it and read it, you know, I would love that. But I've just been thinking about it since we started the program, what Frederick Douglass said. And that, although I want to say that Michelle Alexander's heart was in the right place, and she did bring a lot of attention to the conditions of the brothers and sisters who are in prison slavery, but mass incarceration does what's happening an injustice. You know, it's grammatically not correct, because the majority of American citizens are not in prison. You know, they're not. They're just simply, this is a nation of almost 400 million people. We're talking about a population of about 2 million, you know, if we include jails and prisons and what have you. So that's not even grammatically correct, but also it just takes the sting out of what's happening. You know what I'm saying? When it just doesn't sound the same as slavery, because everybody wants to make comparisons to slavery. We'll hear about, you know, mental slavery, or we'll hear about wage slavery. Well, why do they always want to attach these things to the word slavery? Because slavery is understood to be one of the worst crimes that you can commit against someone. So why are we calling it mass incarceration? And I mean, I know why, because of the media popularizing that word and what have you. But why don't we just call it what the Constitution calls it? Okay? Why are we calling it anything other than what the 13th Amendment calls it? And I think that when people hear that, Brother Jenna, when you tell them that slavery was never abolished, you know, I suppose they could sit on the fence about it. But either I would hope that most people would be moved to right this wrong. I hope they would get angry for being lied to their entire lives through the education system, through the entertainment industry and what have you. So my thing is to just spread slavery abolition and talk to your neighbors, talk to your other family members, you know, because now my family members, they be coming up to me talking about stuff. You know what I'm saying?
You become the light that shines the influence around the people around you. Indeed, when you start getting your story straight. And I'm glad you asked about that quote by Frederick Douglass, because it's a great segue into the next.
Well, we do have another caller before we segue, but let's take the caller. Okay,
it's
go ahead.
It's by Frederick Douglass, and it says, they would not call it slavery, but some other name. Slavery has been fruitful in giving herself names, and it will call itself by yet another name. And you and I and all of us had better wait and see what new form this old monster will assume and what new skin this old snake will come forth. Frederick Douglass, North Star.
I mean, that if that doesn't speak to what we've been talking about in terms of calling it anything but slavery, I mean, he really nails it on the head right there. But we do have another caller. Jenna, did we answer your question? Did you have another comment before we move on to our next caller?
No, y'all go ahead. I'm just enjoying the conversation.
All right,
thank you for your time.
Yes,
appreciate your contribution, brother. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and everybody knows you can chime back in at any time if there's something that you know sticks out to you when you want to comment on it. Well, we do have a former guest. Our guest from last week is joining us tonight,
Scott Brewer.
Yeah, we have Christopher Scott Brewer, who is a candidate for office in Alabama. Welcome to New Abolitionist Radio, Christopher. Glad you could join us. You may have yourself.
You might have to press star star.
No, he has pressed star star. His phone might be muted.
Yeah, your phone might be muted.
Okay, we're not. Okay, he might be having some equipment issues. Max.
Okay.
Well,
Scotty,
he's
the
PC.
Segue that I was talking about was convict leasing, because you know that's like the secret nobody ever talks about. It's the missing link. When slavery allegedly ended, what immediately began to replace it? What rebuilt the South? And that is convict leasing.
Okay, we are getting some sound off of your line.
We're hearing you now, but you're going. Like a buzz sound.
Yeah, I got a buzz. I'm sorry about that.
Scott got a buzz, y'all. You heard it here on New Abolitionist Radio.
Okay, now you can hear me.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay, all right. Scotty, Max, how are you?
Greetings and welcome back, brother.
Doing the best good I can.
Yeah, I know. Are we all? Listen, I wanted to comment, first of all, about that teacher thing. I mean, my God, what? How dumb do you have to be to let that go through? And if that was coming from the curriculum somehow, somebody needs to look into that. Wherever that happened, whatever state that happened in, that was absolutely ridiculous. I can't believe that. But I wanted to touch on a couple of points. You know, we covered a lot of information last week when I was on the show. And as I was doing some soul searching this week, and mind you, this issue has been at the forefront for me. It's now becoming very much at the forefront of my campaign, of my platform, because it seems like, especially here in Alabama, we have such an urgent problem with overcrowding and being at 200% capacity. But I made a connection in my mind as I was researching some of the Christopher Cantwell stuff. I don't know if y'all are familiar with Christopher Cantwell, but he was the host of a radio show or a YouTube channel that he does called Radical Agenda. And this is about white nationalism, Nazism, white supremacy, whatever it is.
He's also known as the crying Nazi.
He's also known as the crying Nazi. So I look back at a couple of cases, and I'm trying to make some comparisons here. And we have a third-time offender, habitual offender, a 49-year-old black man who's now serving 13 years because his third offense was being in possession of two joints. He had done some, or he had been arrested before for a couple of other drug possession crimes. He's got several children. Then we have another situation where, and there's just a couple of cases that I picked out, where there's a young black woman, she had a little bit of cocaine on her. Now, these are not crimes that are bringing harm to other people. You know, if somebody's going to use drugs, they're going to use drugs. Obviously, I've talked about rolling back the war on drugs. It's a huge waste of money. It's been a huge waste of money. It's the DEA, we should get rid of it. I don't think I said that on the show last week, but I stand by that. I believe the DEA should be abolished.
Hey, Scott, if I may interrupt you just momentarily.
Yeah.
When you talk about the war on drugs, it's always a good idea to consider the source.
And of course.
And also, Scott, you will be the second candidate for office I've heard say they want to abolish the DEA. Ron Paul was the first.
Well, good. I'm glad. Rand or Ron? It had to be Ron, not Rand.
Ron. Yeah. Ron.
Yeah. Ron Paul, right. There are actually, you know, several points that I agree with Ron Paul on. You know, kind of wish he had a bigger voice in things today. I don't particularly agree with the Libertarian Party point of view, but they do have some points that I agree with, especially in the area of the war on drugs and stuff like that. So, moving along, and I'm going to get to my point here about Christopher Cantwell. Christopher Cantwell unleashed a tear gas grenade in a riot, in a crowd. He organized and incited a riot. Now, this inciting a riot is against the law, and that's a federal offense. Now, he did this. He organized it over online. All of his hate brigade, they showed up, and he gave them orders, gave them their marching orders, and then he's even seen in this documentary by Vice marching along just like a sergeant would marching his troops into war. And they come dressed for battle and dressed for confrontation, seeking violence. Not only that, but they're carrying a cash load of arms with him. He's seen in the video in his hotel room pulling out knives all over his body, pistols that he's got on his ankle, in holsters, in his belt. Then he's got several semi-automatic weapons like AR-15s laying out on the bed, and he's just sitting there bragging about all this. Now, here's what I'm getting to. This man, it's illegal to have a tear gas bomb, a tear gas grenade in the first place, much less turn it loose, right? This man did this. He sprayed several people with pepper spray, and those were the he was arrested. He was charged on three counts. Two of the counts had to do with his discharging pepper spray, which those two charges have now been dropped. He gets a pretty good defense because he has his followers funneling money into his defense. That's not something that the latter two people that I mentioned about getting drug charges, that's not something that they had access to, right? They probably had a public defender, or they probably had got forced to, not forced, I don't know if they got forced, can't say they got forced, but they got convinced to plea out.
Coerced.
Possibly. Coerced, right. Coerced to plea out. And I know that we've got a main topic here about prisons reforms and prison slavery, and yes, that is very it's a very important topic. But I want to pose to you all that it's not just the prison systems that we have to work on. It is a social norm. Uh-oh. Hold on. My bad. Hold on.
Yeah.
I got a phone call in there. Okay. It's the social norm.
May I interject?
Go ahead.
Just a moment. Let him finish his what he's going to say, because I really want to hear it, and then we'll put you and get in.
Okay, it's not just the correction system. First of all, we call it a correction system, and you know what our brother was saying earlier about rehabilitation. You know, there's kind of an imbalance there between rehabilitation and corrections. You know, when we start talking about corrections, then we're talking about correcting a behavior, which the system is not doing. The rate of recidivism is hard. We're not turning out people who are going out to try to be better, more responsible, productive citizens. And plus, on top of that, they continue to be a burden on the system because they can't get jobs, because we have that box on every employment that once it's checked, you're not going to get a job. We know that. So it's more than just fixing the correction system. It's we have to change our social norms, the social acceptances, to accept that. And then, granted, now this guy Christopher Cantwell, who knows what's going to become of that tear gas charge? You know, he's not charged with inciting a riot. He's not charged with organizing what he organized, which he should be. There should be two more counts on him. If anybody should be serving time, it should be a person like that. But that seems to be acceptable, doesn't it? When you try to make the arguments to the other side who supports that and connects that, you know, they use this tone. And, that's illegal. And, you know, he's not. You know, but you talk about somebody who got arrested for a little bit of cocaine in their pocket. You know, well, they were breaking the law. They were breaking the law. You got to obey the law. Well, let's obey the law. If we're going to have laws, let's obey the law. If we're going to have laws, let's charge people for the laws that we have. Let's not let them slide by because they're aligning with one political side. And that political side is in power. And that political side forgives this kind of behavior. We have to change the social norms. We have to change what we accept as the social norms. And that is inherently going to trickle down across the rest of the system, especially the correction systems. Now, I'm not saying that we don't need to attack the correction systems. We absolutely do. We've got a lot of things there to do. It's multifaceted. We got to do it from the arrest point, from how officers are trained. We got to take them out of this urban warfare mindset where they're even being trained by former veterans who come from Iraq or whatever, and they're training our police in this same urban warfare that we're fighting terrorism in Iraq and Afghanistan. So we got to get rid of that for one thing. We got to get back to community policing. There was a time in this country when drugs, if you caught a couple of kids out in the parking lot smoking a couple of joints, a coach would say, y'all put that out and get in school, because we didn't have these Reagan-esque, Nancy Reagan, just say no, war on drugs with the DEA and all that, right? We didn't have that back then. There is a generation here who understands that. And at some point during the 80s, we made this transition, right? So we have to change the social norms, the social acceptances. To do that, we have to find our candidates who are going to promote that, who are going to stand for that. As you know, as you guys know, I'm operating from a core set of values. It's my core set of values that identifies this kind of thing. I'm not looking to forgive violence. I'm not looking to forgive murderers. We have to have a system where we take care of things like that. If we don't have a system where we take care of things like that, then obviously we're not going to be able to convict and sentence and possibly put to death a Nicholas Cruz who opened up in Parkland with an AR-15 on students, or the kid who did Sandy Hook too, right? We got to have laws. We got to have prisons. We got to have a system. But if we don't change the social acceptances, if we don't start changing what is socially accepted, the social norms, then we're never going to be able to change those problems as well.
You are on the nexus and headquarters of that particular job right there, right. Changing the social norms. And this all leads into education, which is why that clip was played. It starts with proper education. You've been indoctrinated. So when you become a policeman or a prison guard or a judge or a prosecutor, you carry those same indoctrinations with you and false beliefs. And then you apply them to people who don't deserve such blanket understandings of race and justice and communities.
Correct.
So, yeah, thank you for that. Now, there was someone that wanted to comment on what you were saying as well.
Max, before we go to Jenna, who wanted to chime back in, if you could, I can't find that song that we're supposed to play after the first break, which we're 4 minutes overdue, but if you can post that in the chat room so I can play it for our audience. I don't see it in the thread.
I'm unable to actually post it. I can resend you the MP3, but I don't have it uploaded anywhere.
Oh, that's right. You sent it to me via email. Okay, I'll pull it up. But Jenna, while I'm doing that, go ahead with your comments.
I just wanted to ask, what kind of steps or laws that you see that you're planning on implementing? Can you let us know some of that about how you plan on changing that system that you're speaking of? And I mute myself.
Well, we've got to start with rolling back on drug laws. I believe that's one of the first steps. Obviously, drug possessions and charges for drug trafficking and all of that are a big part of why we have a lot of overcrowding and stuff like that. Mandatory sentencing. We got to get some discretion back into the judge's hands. I don't promote that we put get tough on crime conservative judges. I don't promote that we elect them to the benches, but we've got to get some discretion back in there. But we got the draconian, the sentencing laws are draconian. And we've got to change the mindset about how we're policing minority areas. As far as laws, it's not necessarily always, as far as just changing laws, I would say rolling back on the drug laws would be a main point that we would look at.
But legalizing marijuana?
Sure, absolutely, legalizing marijuana and decriminalizing drug use, period. It's a health problem. It's not a criminal problem. It's a health problem. The only reason that we make it a criminal problem is because we have a war on drugs. Anytime that you introduce prohibition, and we saw it in alcohol, when alcohol was prohibited, it produced crime. Now alcohol is not producing crime. Now not to mention the revenues that states can get off of. That's another topic. But as far as like what laws, we're not going to change laws against thievery. I'm not going to change laws against battery. I'm not going to change laws against murder. I'm not going to change a lot of laws, but we might look at domestic violence laws. How are they always being charged and affected? Are they always someone who is committing serious bodily harm on a spouse? Probably not. So these things have to be played out in court also, and they also have to be played out in civil cases. But we can't just change a lot of laws. It's how we sentence them. It's how we sentence them and how we deal with them. That's the point I was trying to make.
Hey, Jenna, if you could hold off, because we are overdue for our break and we need to premiere.
My apologies.
That's okay. We need to premiere this track from Max. Max?
Okay, Scotty. We'll finish this after the track. And if you want to mention the track, that'd be great too. But what you'll be hearing is a new track that just produced by Jay Chatel. out of Providence, Rhode Island, featuring myself, himself, and a couple of other fantastic artists, is called Exposing the American Pie. It was originally produced for a radio station out of Providence, but has since become one of the featured tracks on the upcoming album.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Yes, you're listening to ETAP Radio in Rhode Island, Exposing the American Pie. I'm here with the team taking calls today. I see you, 803. We got a live one from South Carolina. Say what you gotta say. Just keep it real and relative without cursing. We are live on the air. No time for rehearsing. Okay, caller, you're on.
Yo, this is Max and Pax from the Deep South Pack, and I heard you got a program exposing the facts, dropping jewels we can use to expose these fools. Now, you know I'm a soldier who done paid his dues. A bigger, meaner mugger than the nightly news. I'm an abolitionist, and my mission is to end slavery.
There you go. Say it like you feel it. Next caller.
Each slice is uneven. Assert to the people, it's not equal. Lack of respect, violence is legal. The cops beat you. Crooks in high places, divide races, flying to our faces, supplying us with bogus information, psychological tools, corrupt our living environment, pacify the youth that they have a sense of entitlement, doctors diagnose prescriptions to blind our focus, dumb us down for a reason, but we too high to notice, broke community, stress, poverty, less harmony, sidetracked by the best quality technology, lawmakers who break laws and neglect policies, it gets bloody, all for the love of money, it's time to raise awareness, people view the nation as careless, all we need is communication and fairness, we breathe the same air in the sky, I pray and hope, by exposing this American pie, you stay awoke. Exposing the American pie, exposing the American pie, oh no, look what you've done started, oh no, look what you've done started, exposing the American pie, exposing the American pie.
I'm entering your mind like a skull session.
Follow.
This is a meeting with the purpose discussing and exchanging ideas that are replacing solving problems without wasting.
Yeah, that's
I value time that is taking your mind through difficult stages. The faint heart can't keep place. Our lives synchronized like a court case with the same faces. Like ancestors who was enslaved by racist poets who created our home of the brave. It's time we take back our country's dignity. By raising our own families, you better believe I'm going against the grain. Because I'm allergic to all these insane public figures that can't take blame for the chaos this world is falling into. Oh no, you, look what you done started, done started.
Exposing the American pie, exposing the American pie. Oh no, look what you've done started. Oh no, look what you've done started. Exposing the American pie, exposing the American pie. Oh no, look what you've done started. Oh no, look what you've done started.
Exposing the American Pie, produced by Jay Chattel out of Providence, Rhode Island. Jay Chattel is a longtime abolitionist who participated in the March 4th for Freedom event of 2010, which was the precursor for the Occupy movement. He also had a television show in Rhode Island that focused specifically on art and music in the abolitionist movement.
Hey, Max, before... and by the way, great track. Appreciate your artistic talents, brother, and those who work with you. I want to go back, if I may, to something that Scott has said about changing, you know, society and what society as a whole finds acceptable, which should be unacceptable. But, you know, when he was talking about the crying Nazi, Cantwell, and what have you, one of the questions that I had asked, and it had been answered for me, was, you know, I do a lot of reading of history. Always have loved history since I was a teenager, just always digging and digging and digging. And I came across the Klan Act of 1871, which President Ulysses S. Grant used to prosecute, and he almost basically eliminated the Kent Wales of his time and what have you. But unfortunately, successive administrations did not use the Klan Act of 1871 to go after these people who were terrorizing Americans. Okay. And so I was wondering, I was like, hey, is the Klan Act of 1871, is it still on the books? This is federal law. Is it still on the books? Has it been taken off the books? Or did somebody tried to tell me it was rude, unconstitutional? Well, that person was lying. There is a nonprofit organization that I've had a relationship with in the past who had informed me a couple of weeks ago that the Klan Act of 1871 has been used in civil courts to go after some of these organizations and what have you, but it, you know, suing them in civil court. But you know, so I've actually said this in the past and tweeted it out, bring back the Klan Act, bring back the Klan Act, because you know what, the current environment that we have with the man that's in the Oval Office right now has been encouraging this type of behavior. And I feel like it's been a spike. I don't have the data in front of me, but just based off of paying attention to the news, you know, and paying attention to these sort of things for the past 10, 15 years, paying attention closely, I'm seeing a spike. And I tie that directly to Donald J. Trump. Open embrace of white supremacists, historical figures, and then also, you know, like his comments after what happened in Virginia. Oh, there are good people on both sides. How are you going to call a terrorist good? You know, so I would recommend bringing back the Klan Act of 1871. Jenna, did you want to, you said you had another question, or if Scott wanted to respond to what I was saying.
I'd like to respond to that.
Sure, go ahead.
There has been a spike. You're absolutely right that there has been. I mean, that is documented, obviously. And the internet has allowed them to organize much, much better as well. But now this goes back, you know, further than Trump. We've had decades of white supremacists infiltrating law enforcement. Bottom line, there's nothing more to be said about it. They've taken the side of law enforcement. This has happened for years, all through the Jim Crow years. They belong to the KKK. Today they might exist in other groups. They really feel a kinship, and when you see they feel a kinship to law enforcement, they're entering law enforcement, and they're policing our neighborhoods. They're policing our communities. Now that's a fact. That it's not all over. It's not every cop. It's not every police department. It's not every area. But we certainly found it. Eric Holder certainly found it in Ferguson, Missouri. Did he not?
We found it all over America with our Project America is Ferguson, state by state examination.
Well, the FBI during the Bush administration put out a report calling attention to the infiltration of law enforcement by white supremacists. Now, you know, me being a student of history, I was like, what do you mean infiltrating? They've always been a part of it. You know, as I recall reading the book about Robert F. Williams here in Monroe, North Carolina, Negroes with Guns, and how the police would actually escort the Klan through their neighborhoods to shoot at them and what have you. Right. But, you know, to the point, though, the FBI put out that report and nobody's taking any action on it whatsoever. Right. And they redacted a lot of the information that was in there. And they were saying, you know, even as high as federal agencies, they have infiltrated. And the term they gave to these individuals were ghost skins. saying they didn't show the overt tattoos, you know, white supremacist tattoos and what have you. So the FBI put out a report warning about this, but again, there's been no action. Let me rephrase that. There have been very little prosecution of white supremacists in law enforcement.
Scotty, if y'all don't mind,
go ahead, Swift.
Let me say something, because you know, Mr. Brewer just made a good point, as well as something that we've been talking on tonight. Changing the way society thinks, it starts with self. First and foremost, we all have to change the way we think about things in order to lead others to change the way they think. And then we first have to get a full understanding of what we're changing the way we think about. Now, I love Greek. I love the Greek
culture.
I love the Greek mythology. I love a lot of things about the Greek wording. And there's a word called metanoia in Greek. And it simply translated into English among the Christian church. And I like to always point out the Christian church, since everybody hollers they're Christian. You know, a lot of people in America do that. And they got this loving way. But anyhow, metanoia means simply change the way you think. Now, first and foremost, they're talking about sin when they're talking about repenting from sin. Now, if we change the outlook of what we are changing the way we think of things, such as slavery in America, first we're going to have to understand on how we think about slavery in the first place. Well, right now, society is okay with it, and they've been okay with it for centuries. And like Max pointed out earlier, it has changed and evolved names over centuries. But the thing that we have to do is we're going to have to change the way we think. We're going to have to repent from the way we think of it and accept it as a social norm, as Mr. Brewer said earlier. But anyhow, I'm going to leave with that. But before I leave, because I'm going to have to get involved here, I want to remind the listeners that in 2018, all across America, and I think right now, Max, we got 13 states on board with the strike that's going on. Now, I'm not going to go out there and say what states they are, because as of right now, we don't need to release that. But let me stress the importance of why we're on strike. First and foremost, the inmates, the confined citizens inside these prisons, have to give you something out there to fight first. Brother Kinetic Justice has always stressed for years. He said this is a fight from the inside out. And there is so much truth. And until we on the inside give you on the outside something to do something for, there's nothing that you can do. Like that brother was asking a while ago, what can we do? Well, first, we're going to have to give you something to do. Now, by us going on strike, we're asking, and now we're not even asking, we're demanding for rehabilitation to be restored as men. We're demanding that the Congress in each one of these states across America hears our 10 demands that they're putting forth, and we are demanding change. We are demanding that people stop looking at us as animals, and that they start looking at us as men that will one day return back to society, family, friends, and our children. Now, over the past few years, and like I pointed out all the riots that's gone on since 71 all the way up till recently in South Carolina, the harvest of what's been going on inside of America's prisons has been violent. In 2018 and all the past shutdowns that we've done in Alabama and across the Southeast and on the West Coast in California, we've done this, and we beg society to sit there and take notice that we're doing this in peace. We're showing you that we're not animals, that we can do this in peace. So what we need you to do is, when we do what we do, take it to Congress. Let Congress know, hey, this is what's going on. And when Congress starts listening to these things, this is like Mr. Brewer right now, when he gets into office, and I'm not even sitting there saying if he gets into it, when he gets into office, he is going to know, because it's been brought to his attention. But until we start bringing this to Congress and senators' attention and making them represent us, there is nothing going to ever be done. And when it, if the roles change, and God knows, I hope it don't happen, but if we stop, ever, if we ever stop doing it in peace, it's going to be nothing but bloodbaths all over again. And I'm going to leave y'all with that, man. I appreciate y'all having me on tonight.
All right. Hey, you know.
Thank you, brother.
It was something
else. I just got some information in, Scotty, I'd like to share. And that is from Donald Dawson Jr., who just told me that they already have 40,000 signatures in the early voting period in Ohio to fight the 13th exception clause that they have.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's great. That's great. Now, and that gives me, you know, that kind of relates to what I was about to say. Going back to Jenna's question about, you know, what do we do? What do we do? And Kinetic just reminded me, I didn't say it, it was on my mind to say, but we have to engage these politicians. We have to attend these community town hall meetings, which I have done in the past, you know, and engage candidates and support candidates who are willing to hear our grievances. And not only hear our grievances, but to find the logic in the evidence and what we're alleging is occurring. And so we have to engage. Right. We have to engage and support these politicians. And, you know, I write my local district congressman about slavery. I've had it wasn't a positive conversation, but I've had debates with his aides and what have you. I'm talking about Patrick McHenry, who represents North Carolina's 10th district in Congress. And, you know, so that's what we have to do. Not only engage our family members, but we have to also engage policymakers and put this information in front of them and get them on record as either being for slavery or against slavery, because I don't think they can argue with what the 13th Amendment says.
Hey, Scotty, I would like to point out the weight of what's happening right here, right now, today. We have had incarcerated individuals who are politically active, explaining the circumstances, while also a shoo-in candidate for the Legislative House of Alabama is here listening and discussing modern-day slavery and human trafficking. This is not something you hear every day, everywhere. CNN ain't gonna play this. Neither is Fox News.
Or
this
NPR.
And the heart attack and the weight of it is immense. We are literally changing history right here.
You know, and just think if other, and it's not just New Abolitionist Radio, there are some other online digital radio programs that's out there that's you know, having these conversations and these dialogue around the truth that slavery was never abolished. But if we could just get more of that, you know what I'm saying? More of that from our local radio stations and from these corporate media. But we can't sit around waiting on them, because many of them belong to, these stations are owned by conglomerates that are invested in private prisons and things, you know, the status quo and what have you. But we have another caller.
Hey, Scotty, before we take the caller, can I just point out one more thing about people in office that are allies of ours?
Yes.
There's something important that's going on right now with Senator Lena C. Taylor. She was accused of racism for calling a bank teller a house Negro. First, the teller was black. Secondly, Senator Taylor is black. And racism doesn't happen between two black people against each other, period. But they have a whole site set up to paint her as a racist, saying Senator Lena, the racist flea bagger, Taylor must resign. Let me tell you why they're doing this concentrated attack. It's because Senator Taylor is a slavery abolitionist who proposed legislation to end Wisconsin's legal slave trade allowed by the exception to slavery in the state constitution. Wisconsin is a slave state where blacks are incarcerated as much as 10-1, despite making up only 6.5% of the total population. They have a DOJ budget that is over $1.5 billion annually. In the city of Milwaukee, more than 1 in 2 black men are expected to spend time in prison. Senator Taylor is suffering the same slings and blades suffered by black abolitionists of the 1870s. She needs your support. Don't fall for the BS slavers play when they want to get rid of a real enemy to legal slavery. And we're talking about a senator who initiated legislation saying it's time for Wisconsin to ban slavery.
Yes, I agree. That's very important. And that's another thing, Max, is we Colorado with Amendment T just barely was barely defeated, and it took a whole lot of outside money for campaign ads to defeat Amendment T, which would have removed this slavery exception clause from Colorado's constitution. But, you know, citizen-led initiatives like that, you know, even although the ultimate goal is to have the exception clause removed from the U.S. Constitution, as we pointed out here on when we were examining all 50 states' constitution, 99.9% of them have the very same exception clause. And we have seen a number of citizens in different states attack it on the state level.
Oh, and one more thing, Scotty, in regard to Ferguson is America, the series that we did, I have been offered the opportunity to receive $10,000 in order to produce that series in different formats, video, for instance, and so I'm going to be working on that. And if that, if I get the opportunity to get that 10 grand, I'm going to be needing some professionals to get on board and help me put this thing together.
Most certainly. Let's take our caller. We have a caller. Your area code is 478. Thank you for calling in the New Abolitionist Radio. What's your name and what's on your mind?
Hello.
Greetings.
We can hear you. Welcome to New Abolitionist.
Okay. Okay. This is Kia. I've called before.
Hey.
You asked about the teacher thing, teacher video.
Yes.
Okay, because I didn't hear anybody respond to that.
Right. I didn't either. I was hoping to get something.
it's good in the sense that it's exposed that, you know, he is letting us know that these things are happening. But, of course, it's disgusting that these things are happening. You know, we talk about the police unions and stuff. No one talks about the teacher unions, how when the kids get thrown off the bus and this, that, and the other, and things like this come up, they never say anything. The women sleeping with all the males, well, I mean, I know those both ways, but it seems like it's a whole lot of women sleeping with these little boys. I don't know what that's about. But they don't talk about that either. And then they want to get on, go on strike, talk about we need a raise. You know, when you signed up for that job, it didn't pay a lot of money. Everybody knows teachers don't get paid. Teachers haven't been paid since I went to school. Not with school in the 80s. They always been talking about they don't have no money. Every day, I don't have no money, I don't have no money, I don't have no money. That's what they've been talking about. At this point, they give you a contract that says you're going to earn 5 cents or whatever little bit of money you're going to earn. You go, okay. And then I can see if you were giving us better results, especially when it comes to the black community. And I'm not going to say minority. I'm tired of minority. You are messing up with the black community. That's what these teachers are doing. And I don't have any children, but I would definitely support those with children, you know, going, talking to these teachers. You know, I'm sorry you don't make a lot of money, but my kids don't know how to do this. My kids don't know how to do this. So until you teach our kids right, we going to keep the purse strings tight. Because, you know, you need slogans, those catchy things. And that's what you need to say. Because I remember one time when I was in school, and I went to a quote-unquote good school, we had a homework assignment. It's at history. That's where a lot of this stuff happens. History, we're reading a book. It's old. It's calling us colored and Negro and this and that. And, like, we didn't talk about doing our homework, but we all came to school the next day. I guess they didn't think the other black kids before us did their homework. We were like, what is up with this book? We need a new book, blah, blah. I mean, the next day, we was like, where's our book, blah, blah, blah. And then they gave us, like, they did give us a better book. They gave us the edition that the other grade before us had, which was a little bit, which was better.
Cause but they're ready to buy your teacher's guns, though.
Yeah, and you want to do all this, and as someone who educates in college, you know, I know there's a lot in the school and kids go through a lot, but I teach a lot of you've missed something. These kids, yes, they can read, but their comprehension is not very good.
Well, wouldn't you say
Kia. And I mean, I'm sorry you need the money, but you're not giving me results either. I mean, are you saying if we give you money, you're going to guarantee results? And I don't mean test score results. I mean real life results. My kids knows how to read. This, you know, and then using slavery. This has happened before, not just with slavery. I think it was a few years ago. Some teacher made an exam about so-and-so had this many vials of crack and this, that, and the other. Yes. So these things keep happening. And I want to know, where are these? I mean, you see a parent here or there, but where is a group of parents that's saying it is enough? Where is the NEA, the National Education Association? Why are they not saying, okay, these are the things we definitely cannot teach? You know, because when you are an educator, even at the elementary school level, you have a degree. You can go do something else. So, I mean, you know, oh, it's so hard. You can go teach at another, and I know, oh, you have a heart for the kids. Well, having a heart for people, as I know you know, you two definitely know, means you're going to, a lot of times you're going to sacrifice some some finances, and you're going to have to decide if you're really about it, really teach correctly, don't bring in things to communities, not just saying just don't do this to the black people, don't do this to the white people, because then they think it's okay. And they're like, you can't do it across the board. And I guess to go back to, I guess, with the man running for office, he was saying, oh, we keep over-policing the minority communities. No, we keep over-policing the black communities. I've never heard from Arabs in Detroit and Dearborn and Detroit, Michigan, talk about they coming in our houses thinking we are terrorists. I've never heard that.
Right. The Hispanic community gets hit pretty hard, though. You got to admit that they do get hit pretty hard.
Yeah, if most of that neighborhood is definitely dark.
Native Americans are the only group that actually are incarcerated more than black Americans.
And that's only because they were poor things. They were 5 of them left, and they put 4 of them in the jail. That is bad. I don't know what's happened to them. But not all minorities, and you know your area and what areas, how it's really being targeted. It's not all minorities across the board. So we need to call people to be specific. This happened to black people. This happened to Native American people. This happened to Latin people. I've never heard any Arab American or Arab person talk about they are coming to my house because they think we terrorists.
I think we also need to add poor people. Because here in North Carolina and Reverend Barber, he's done an excellent job in addressing some of these issues at the county level. Let me rephrase that. He's been addressing the issues as far as getting results. I haven't seen any. But, you know, these poor communities are really preyed upon. Because, you know, I live in a black community in a predominantly white rural county. Our community is not being preyed upon like that, because we have pretty much stable community. People got jobs, you know, generations we've been here and what have you. But we are seeing, you know, the same thing happen to impoverished people. But I think Mr. Brewer wanted to respond. He's still on the line. His name again is Christopher Scott Brewer, and he's running for office in Alabama. Scott, you wanted to respond to something she said?
Well, I'll start with the we can have a discussion about schematics, about how we identify communities or identify people like that. That's obviously, she makes a fine point. I don't want to disparage that point at all. If she wants us to call it black communities, then you know I'm fine with calling it black community. That's not a problem for me. But I wanted to address the point about teachers. And now my mother was a teacher for 40 years, and I'm one who is putting giving teachers raises at the forefront of my campaign. One thing I want to make a point about that is we've gotten into this standardized testing and stuff like that. So when you pay a low wage, a low salary to a teacher, to someone who has earned a degree, and yes, they can go out. If they don't like the pay, they can go out and get another job. And that is what they do. The good ones who need, who are living setting a little bit higher standard for themselves, they are doing that. And what we're leaving behind is, listen, I'll make an analogy. If you pay a ditch digger wage, you're going to get a ditch digger.
It's why you never get that damn salt you asked for when you get your fries.
Exactly. So if we pay a nominal salary that rewards, and I'm going to say this is for policing as well. A lot of areas we have in the country, not just in Alabama, we got a lot of them in Alabama, where the wage for a police officer is very low. Some start out at like $10 an hour. Maybe they start out at $12 an hour. A lot of them top out at $15 an hour. That's not promoting inspiration for a more well-rounded individual who's looking for a career, whether it be in teaching or whether it be in policing. When we start to bring these institutional salaries up, we start rewarding these jobs, then we'll start attracting more people who can have more critical thinking about them, who will get more engaged with taking on curriculum issues, who will get more engaged with the parents, who will get more engaged with the children. As it stands right now, we got a lot of teachers who are just spending their time at the desk while these standardized tests are being given. So when I want to promote giving raises to teachers, when I want to promote giving policing a better salary, that is inherently the result that I would like to see coming from that, and that's how I'll promote it as well.
I feel the same way, but with both of you, I agree. First of all, I'd love to see teachers get paid the same thing that sports figures get paid. Secondly, I'd like that payment to be based on results. I mean, if you have educated so many kids and they've all went off to college, hell yeah, you should be making $1 million a year because right. You're creating the future.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And I think we can produce better results when I think they'll want to produce better results. And we'll get more one-on-one interaction, you know, in a situation like that as well. And when we start seeing the better results, then absolutely, you know, and we'll bring up the level of professionalism. When the level of professionalism is brought up, I think we'll see some changes.
I think that's also very important in quote-unquote policing, which I still had to call slave catching. But
I understand.
You know, there was one city here in North Carolina that has a requirement that all police officers must have a 4-year degree. And, you know, you were speaking about the critical thinking and what have you, although I've, you know, witnessed people with PhDs, Boyce Watkins, who don't seem to be able to critically think about, you know, these issues. But I think that that is why we see so much police violence. Coupled with the fact that there's very little accountability, even when they're caught on video violating a citizen in such a manner, but it's right. not attracting the right individuals. And as Otis points right. out in the chat room, you had a guy who wanted to be a police officer, and they said that he was overqualified, and he sued them, and it went to the Supreme Court, and the courts ruled that it's perfectly okay to weed out smart people in policing, to use Otis words. So, yeah.
Hey, guys, we are running towards the end of our show. We got 2 seconds to do, and I did have a final question for Scott while he was here, and I wanted to make a comment about the education system and what we heard in that video about teachers. I had to make a choice about 2 things that I want to cover tonight because we've run out of time, and I think I have made them. But let me get this out the way first. When it comes to this education system, it's the same in every system all across our country. The people who are in it, the people who populate it, are ill-informed, under-informed. They're living under fallacies. We have so many people who harbor racist views that are a part of every system that we have. And to the best of my knowledge, there is no test that is given when people are hired to determine if they're a racist.
And they do have those tests, Max. They do have those tests.
Okay, well,
what I'm saying is the test exists. I'm not saying that they're giving the people the test.
But they're not an application.
Right.
Right, they're not an application. So you can become a doctor, you can become a cop, you can become a lawyer, you can become a senator, a president and nobody ever finds that your racism is a problem. And as long as that exists, we're going to be miseducating our children, particularly about slavery, even to the point where we'll change the textbooks like they did in Texas to rename slavery as an unpaid internship. It's completely insulting, and it's a continuation of what I have been telling you is a crime against humanity. We're literally rewriting history to whitewash away the crimes of this nation while we're committing them. So that's how I feel about the education system and all these systems in general, which have no bar in regards to racism. I mean, here in South Carolina, we have had these things occur on a regular basis in our school systems. Socially acceptable. And that has to change. And that's one of the things that we are doing our damnedest here on New Abolitionist Radio to do. Now, Scott, we understand that you're on the same page with us. So I want to ask you a question. It appears, based on the evidence that I've seen, that Alabama may be going through the same corruption in their prison systems that Mississippi went through. And I'm talking about incidents where we're having no-bid contracts that are issued out for hundreds of millions of dollars to private industries that handle your medical facilities and your medical treatment in the prison industry itself.
Yeah, and giving kickbacks to the policymakers or the ones who are the officials who award the contracts. That's what happened with Christopher X.
If it turns out, Scott, that Alabama is also involved with the same corruption and groups and industries that Mississippi was involved with, would you be willing to prosecute those people or push for prosecution of those people?
I'll indict it as hard as I can from the floor and scream it at the top of my lungs.
That's what I wanted to hear, brother. God bless you. God bless you. I said, we have a couple of segments left that we got to do, and there was one thing that I did want to cover before we ended the program, and that's the missing link. The missing link is called convict leasing. Nobody ever talks about it, but it's what immediately replaced slavery after 1865. It was established in 1866 and went all the way up to 1928 in Alabama, where it only ended because a cave-in killed 128 men, women, and children. But it was also practiced in South Carolina all the way up into the 70s. And to be specific, and technically, it is still being practiced today in states like Alabama, where prisoners are making and serving, providing services in their inmate labor force. So the missing link is convict leasing. And there's a video I want to play, Scotty. I put it in the link in the chat earlier. And it's titled Convict Leasing. It's from, I believe, PBS. And there's a little clip about what a gentleman explains in there about this convict leasing system, which still exists today in a more reformed fashion. Because rather than just send out their labor, we are warehousing bodies for a cost.
Okay, Max, give me a second to cue that up because I have a video blocker that doesn't allow videos to start automatically. So let me just...
It's actually an article and the video is embedded inside
the article. Right. But the video won't play when I have that on. So I just disabled it. Let me see if I can roll this video. Here we go.
Convict leasing in the South in this period becomes a new way of racial control among white Southerners attempting to limit African-American economic independence and freedom in general. And what that means is that state officials would sell the labor of an African-American prisoner to a private contractor. The terms of that agreement usually involved a period of time, say 10 days for a very minor sentence, to up to a year. And in exchange for getting the labor of the prisoner and taking full custody of the prisoner by the private contractor, the state would receive revenue. What that meant in terms of what convict leasing involved was that African Americans would work in any industry, whether working for a private farmer, whether it was in a brick-making factory, a coal mine, any number of business concerns, and the business owner would have absolute dominion over the black person for the period of time of the lease. But once you were in the system, you could spend the rest of your life there. And that was a direct consequence of the reality of being a convict lease and having to fight literally to survive day by day in incredibly brutal conditions.
Convict leasing. It's the missing link. when you look at the transformation from slavery to convict leasing, you can follow it directly to chain gangs, and from chain gangs to Unicor, and from Unicor to what we see today with 37 states at least who have laws that allow for them to use prison labor for commercial purposes.
Like I said before, my little brother, who was wrongfully convicted for breaking and entering with no evidence, no property he was supposed to stole, just his word against somebody else's word. But they had him working on a turkey farm, man. Had him working on a turkey farm, processing turkeys and what have you. And again, I don't think that Americans really realize how much corporate America is involved in exploiting, you know, modern day convict leasing. You know, State Farm, they have call centers with prisoners answering phones. You know, whenever I had to deal with customer service with a company, I always asked them, are you a prisoner? You know, because you never know. They're in every industry today. So, but Max, we're running out of time. We got Mind, Body, and Spirit coming up at 10 o'clock, and we do want to get to our regular segments. Do you want to take those?
Yes, sir. I'd also like to point out some other good news is that Google has recently banned ads for bail bond services. They also see this as a crime against humanity and will no longer allow bail bondsmen to use Google for their ads.
Shout out
to Google for that.
And one thing, you know, we've had the primaries have been going on in various states. Some good news to report. There's a candidate in Mecklenburg County, that's Charlotte, North Carolina, who's running for sheriff. He's a former detective, and he has pledged to bring back face-to-face visits with family and friends for those in the jail. They had that video system. The last sheriff implemented that very expensive video system and eliminated, person-to-person visits with those who are incarcerated in the jail. He has also pledged to eliminate solitary confinement.
All right, Scotty, thank you for that. What we're going to do today is I'm just going to do the Riders of the 21st Century Underground Railroad. Our abolitionist in profile is John Brown, who almost needs no description, and we've profiled him here several times before, so we'll provide you with a link to his story if you want to read more.
And it was his birthday or something, right?
Say again, Scotty?
His birthday was today, wasn't it?
Yes, his birthday is today, May 9th. He and my son share a birthday, John Brown and my son, no doubt. And also, the story where I said I want to talk about Brazil, we're going to carry that over and do it next week and talk a little bit about Brazil's prisons. We didn't have time today, but that's okay because we definitely had a wonderful program. Thank you to everybody that participated. Now, DNA and other new evidence proves that two men served a combined 36 years for a crime that never occurred. New York, May 7, 2018. With the consent of the District Attorney's Office, today a New York County Supreme Court judge vacated the convictions of Gregory Counts and Van Dyke Perry for 1991 gang rape that the complainant now acknowledges never occurred. DNA testing that identified another man's sperm in the complainant's underwear led to a joint investigation between the Innocence Project, the Office of the Applegate Defender, and the New York County District Attorney's Office Conviction Integrity Unit, revealed that law enforcement failed to fully investigate the case that resulted in two young black men serving a combined 36 years for a crime that never occurred. Counts, represented by the Innocence Project, served 26 years before he was paroled last year. Perry, who was paroled in 2001 and is represented by the Office of the Applegate Defender's Office of the Applegate Defender's Reinvestigation Project, served 10 years. We are grateful to the New York County District Attorney's Office for working collaboratively with us and moving quickly to restore justice to Mr. Counts and Mr. Perry, said Barry Sheck, co-director of the Innocence Project, which is affiliated with Cardozo School of Law. This case underscores why it's critical that prosecutor conviction integrity units work collaboratively with defense attorneys, and we are hopeful that the conviction integrity unit will make this level of collaboration a standard part of its process moving forward, said Sheck, who serves as an advisor to that unit. Sima Safi, a senior staff attorney with the Innocence Project, added, "This case paints a very dark picture of the criminal justice system in New York City, especially at the time and continuing today. Like so many other cases that have come to light in recent years, these young black men were aggressively prosecuted and given lengthy prison sentences with very little care for finding the truth." And we here at New Abolitionist Radio would like to say, welcome to freedom, Gregory Counts and Van Dyke Perry.
Welcome to freedom.
All right. As I said, we'll provide our abolitionist in profile on New Abolitionist Radio. And be sure to check our forums on the Black Talk Radio community and become a member so you can see the things that we weren't able to cover today. Any final comments for the evening, Scotty Reed?
Yes. Although we weren't able to get to every topic that you planned, we still had, I feel like, a very productive dialogue. And I just want to thank the abolitionists who called in, because that's what you are. You are abolitionists. If you know for a fact that the 13th Amendment and many of these state constitutions did not abolish slavery and you got a problem with that, and you are doing your part, whatever you define your role to be, to bring it to an end, you are a slavery abolitionist, and therefore my brother and sister. So just thank you all.
Amen, Scotty. I echo your sentiments, and thank you to everyone who participated this evening. I look forward to next week's conversation. I'm going to quote William Lloyd Garrison in my closing. "I am aware that many object to the severity of my language, but is there not cause for severity? I will be as harsh as the truth and as uncompromising as justice. On this subject, I do not wish to think or to speak or write with moderation. No, no. Tell a man whose house is on fire to give moderate alarm. Tell him to moderately rescue his wife from the hands of the ravisher. Tell the mother to gradually extricate her babe from the fire into which it has fallen. But urge me not to use moderation in a cause like the present. I am in earnest. I will not equivocate. I will not excuse. I will not retreat a single inch, and I will be heard." William Lloyd Garrison, the Liberator. Remember, abolition is a reason for a revolution, so we can finally know peace. Peace. Rise up, rise up.
Just lift your eyes up, let your wise rise up. See the signs of the times, if it's time, rise up, rise up. When death and hell dwell among all God's people, when those we chose and trusted have become completely corrupted and inherently evil, when the feast that feeds you starves our father's children, when snuff, porn, and pedo forms begin to get